It's hour three of the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. Donal Kavanagh with you for the next hour before we hand over to John Breslin, who's going to be around the Northwest. Now, a scheme offering free contraception has been expanded since its launch in 2022. The programme has offered free contraception to women, girls and people who identify as transgender or non-binary. Joined on the line by GP Dr. Sarah Brennan. Dr. Brennan, good morning.
Good morning. Happy New Year to you.
And a Happy New Year to you and yours as well. The main change here is an expansion of the age for which people will qualify for this scheme.
Yes, yes, it's great to see it expanding. So it was up to age 30 and now it's increased up to age 31, which is great. So from 17 up to age 31 now.
It initially was 25, it expanded last year to 30, up to 31 now, as you say. An important one for people, particularly those who perhaps are struggling to make ends meet, and important that they do have access to contraception and important that they have access to family planning.
Yeah, of course. And with the increase in inflation, this is kind of something that might be squeezed out for people because it does cost a lot of money. It requires that you visit your GP at least once a year for checkups. And then, of course, there's the extra cost of having to purchase the medications, which are also covered under the scheme, which is great. So the consultations and the medications and then any devices that need to be inserted, all of that is covered under the scheme.
So women, girls and people identifying as transgender or non-binary aged between 17 and now 31, if they wish to avail of this scheme, the first call has got to be to their GP.
Yes, of course. And most GPs have signed up for it. There are very few who haven't. But in the instance that GPs haven't signed up to it, they could potentially contact other practices. Or then for women who are under the age or 25 and under could also access a service in the Women's Centre in Letterkenny where there is a free walk-in service for young women every Monday on an evening time. So that's another option.
And that will qualify as well. Dr. Sarah Brennan, mm-hmm. thanks indeed just for letting us know about this. It's an important one, as you say. We just want to make people aware of this. So thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. Nice to chat to you, Brendan.
You too. That's Dr. Sarah Brennan there. And as she said, either go to your GP or there is a free walk-in facility at the Women's Centre in Letterkenny if you choose to do that instead. Just want to remind you, by the way, as we said, the Around the Northwest programme is coming up after this. At 12:30, we'll have our first Hours to Protect for 2024. And this week, Donna Marie Doherty will be looking at post-Christmas recycling. Donna Marie will chat to Theresa Gallen, manager of TT Childcare, about junk art, and Councillor Niamh Kennedy about what recycling centres that Donegal County Council has to offer. So recycling, and especially recycling in the post-Christmas period, very much on the agenda for Hours to Protect, the first of the new year. And that's with Donna Marie Doherty at 12:30 this afternoon during the Around the Northwest programme with John. Now, we're going to move on and we're going to go to Zoom and we're going to speak to Councillor Micheál Colum-McGillaspig because there was a terrible story developed over the new year, and we're going to talk to Micheál about that in just a few moments. But Micheál is representative from the Glenties electoral area, and as we know, the Glenties electoral area and the Glenties municipal district indeed lost one of its members last week. Micheál Colum, Majinwa. Micheál, the loss of Councillor Noreen McGarvey, everyone, I think, regardless of their politics, in the Glenties MD is grieving this.
Yeah, it was a very difficult couple of weeks for the Glenties MD, but more so than anything for the McGarvey family. And I have to say it was something that we didn't see coming, and we've lost one of the greatest, nicest, kindest person within local government. We were talking yesterday about how we've lost three councillors since the beginning of 2019 and how difficult that is between up on the shore to outside Letterkenny to our own MD, and there was very much of a strong pulling together of the other five councillors despite our differences, because that's what Noreen would have wanted. Noreen had a very special gift of not being confrontational and pulling people together and having great ability to listen and to work hard and to also deliver. I worked with Noreen on many projects, and it was a great honour to have had that opportunity. And she will be greatly lost. And I have to say, I do not look forward to our next MD meeting at all, without her being there.
And her commitment to the MD and to her constituents was such that we know she was ill, and we knew she was ill, but I certainly had no idea she was as ill as she was. But still, the budget meeting and the last plenary meeting of council, Noreen McGarvey attended online with the picture switched off, but she was at those meetings. And I certainly, and I don't think anyone really knew what would be on the cards just weeks afterwards.
Her commitment to her community was unquestionable. It didn't matter to Noreen if you voted for her or not. It didn't matter for Noreen if that community had a strong vote for her or not. What mattered to Noreen was to go out there and do what she was elected to do, and that's what she did, and she done it extremely well. And Noreen was a very private person. She chose not to share her difficulties with many of us, and that you have to respect and admire, to be honest with you. I suppose all we can do now is kind of be supportive there for the family the best we can. And there are, it's a big, wide family from the McGarveys to the Rogers, quite a lot of cousins and close friends. And there was different aspects to Noreen. There was a very quiet, personal, hard-working aspect to Noreen, but there was another fantastic aspect to Noreen, which was just joy and fun and laughter to be around. Because by Jesus, there was one thing Noreen could do is make people laugh. Mm. And I'm absolutely heartbroken, and I don't want to overtalk because I'm not sure if this is my place to do, even any talking on Noreen. But all I can say is that she should be terribly missed and unplaceable, because her ability and commitment was unreal, and it went very quietly, and she got work done.
Got a mahagath for that, Micheál. We want to speak to you this morning about what happened at Mahragallon, the vandalism of a seat that's been erected in the area in memory of a local person. The mind boggles.
Well, look, I suppose this is a sad story. Well, first world sad story, but yet there's positives that come out of it. This started many years ago with Paddy Haig, a fantastic character who's no longer with us, from down in Dore, with the father or McFadden family in Dore, which would be very well known. And like that, a fantastic character. And he says to me one day when I was down at the pier, which I have a great interest in, their piers and harbours, says, "Now, Micheál, you think now for an old man like me, you'd go and get me a chair so I could sit here and look out at Ellen Golan and the Shunny and Alan Baugh and Ishmen." And so anyway, a long story short, we went off and we secured, thankfully, I forget the name of the company now in Kildare. God, Fiacra will kill me. My apologies, Fiacra and Larkin. Newbridge Memorials, who have relation here and who've been coming here since we've been 11 years of age. And he gave it to us at an extremely cheap price. And I'm grateful that Kieran Gillespie, my cousin, paid for it. And that kind of spiraled out of there that we decided that we would try to look across the Dooey to put in chairs, which would allow people that would have walked them Dooey, it's a fantastic, gorgeous part of West Donegal, that they would have a resting point every 50 to 100 yards, because that big long walk, it's too long to do it in one stretch for some people. So we started off and more people came forward and we got more chairs. But unfortunately, the specific chair that was dedicated to Thomas Willie Joe, and it's only after being recently erected, Saba runs the ferry into Gola every year, and he paid for it because poor Thomas had just, sadly passed away. But we also had another chair there that was paid for by Charlie Max taxis for an Ashunni, Joe Mulligan, and then that was vandalised. And again, where Fiacre from Kildare stepped in and replaced it. And a couple of weeks ago, we had Dolty Boyle, who very, very kindly came down from Boyle's Memorials, came down and helped me tidy up some of the stone because the writing had been washed away, you know, with the sea salt and that. And, we were talking about getting more chairs and that as well. And we didn't expect that this one here would be broken. But Carol Saylor now, who I do a lot of work with in relation to this here, myself and Carol and Saba, and he rang me yesterday to say that he was on to Fiacre about the chair because he was up for the new year. And he, the same as the last chair, has kindly says that he will replace it without a cost. And that's not cheap either. And that's very kind of a person who doesn't have to do this. He's kind enough to give it to us at a cheap enough price. But to go now and to replace the chair is fantastic. It's Bynum Tanya's done, given that recognition to his company and especially his son who runs that company now, Fiacre Gramahigat. But the plan is to get more chairs. There's a number of other chairs that we have ordered. More people have come forward now saying they'd like to donate more chairs. And we would like it to be seen, but we have to talk to landowners, which is very important. We have to talk to landowners to allow us to put chairs along it. And it's for no other reason but to give people of all abilities the ability or the opportunity to walk across that Dewey and to be able to take that rest and look out on maybe their home place where they were forced off through government policy, through Gola or Nishmen or different islands. Because West Donegal were absolutely blessed in terms of the beauty and the scenery and the heritage and the culture, and our islands play a very central part to that. And why would we not allow people to go for them walks and have that residence points?
And as you've said, this is an initiative that's come from the community. It's come through the community. It's being funded by the community. It's being supported by the community. And these acts of vandalism are absolutely the antithesis. They're absolutely against that community spirit that is driving this initiative.
Yeah, if you look, for instance, like, and you mightn't think much, people mightn't think of it, but the very fact that we have to go down, we have to dig out a wee found of it, Gillespie's quarry will come along and they'll give us the concrete for free. Then we have the community then that'll chip in and will raise the funds for it. Then you'll have the likes of Neil Sissy, who will maybe write a poem for us to commemorate the individual or the scenery around it, because all the chairs are the poems that are on them are in Gaelic, and that's not an easy task. And then we have to go and set the chairs in, and then looking after them. Like, we can't look after them forever, but we've tried to, like I says, where Dolty Boyle was very good, and it is very much a community led project. It's hands in the pockets and hands in the shovels by the community. Nobody else. It's not a grant that we get from government or from Corlechondaigunangal. I'm not saying that we would refuse any either, Nick, but it is a community initiative, and there would be a lot of chairs needed to go right across the Dewey if that was the wishes of the landowners. And I would think and I would hope that the landowners would see this as a very positive step. And I can't thank everybody that has participated in this from the very beginning. Carol Saylor and Saba, who very much from the very beginning. Hughie Harkin as well, who put in a big slab of concrete on a number of occasions for us, right down at the seawall. Corlechondaigunangal has done a lot of work around that area where we got access.
Yeah, I think we've just lost the audio there.
Somebody's trying to ring me. the joys of technology. What do you call it? Probably somebody ringing me to tell me I'm radio. Yeah. But anyway, so we've done a lot of work around our piers and harbours from Aran Mór right into Mhaire Gathlan and to other parts that have been neglected for many years. And seats mightn't sound like something that important, but it actually really is. It really is. It allows people to go down and find that quiet moment on their own, maybe in the heart of winter or on the height of the summer, or to maybe sit there and actually engage with somebody sitting beside them and make new friendship. And I think it's really, really, it's really important that we continue to try to put more chairs in to allow people that walk and that resting space so that we can continue to enjoy our very beautiful, beautiful island, our community. And I'm sorry for keep using the word beautiful. I'm totally and utterly passionate about where I'm from and how stunningly gorgeous it is. As much as I love...
Well, I have walked it myself and I agree wholeheartedly.
I know you have. And as much as I love the idea of people coming to our community, I don't want too many people coming either and telling everybody about it. So anybody that's listened, don't tell too many people about how beautiful West Donegal is. Mm. But it is, and it's a place that you can come in, go for your walks. You can go up to Hudibugs or Shinogs or Mickey's, Jack's and Glasha, Cash and Orr. Like, you look at Anagar now, like, we have a blue flag beach in the parish. We have a distillery, we have breweries, we have top-end foods, and you have something that myself and, I'm sorry, but going back, that me and Noreen had been working on in terms of developing the parish of Anagar and it becoming a branded tourist destination, more so than what the industry is doing themselves, working with Udris and with Corle Fonda Gunningal. We have the Blue Flag Beach, flights coming in on a daily basis, thanks to the staff down there, the distillery, the brewery, the fantastic fruit from Denny Minnies to Cashinor, to Castletuchan, to Leo's and Tessie's. And, you know, we have a number of beautiful glamping sites now, new one just opening up there on the Farsha glamping site, Minlekia, Sleepy Hollows. Things are really, really changing for us here and fantastic work. But what we cannot have is people, if this is the case, come along and trying to vandalise things that we worked really hard to achieve.
Well, hopefully, ultimately, what comes out of this is the story of a community working together to improve facilities and not what's happened in this instance, and may this be an isolated incident. And I have to say, though, I mean, you were saying you don't want too many people to come. You're doing a very bad job of limiting numbers the way you've just sold West Donegal, because you want me to... you got me wanting to go back there next weekend.
And also recognising, you know, that there's fantastic community groups out there doing unbelievable work as well. Cuesta Forbrahal, right across West Donegal, from the Mahara to Ellen Hardy to Clachanila. And they're fantastic. And the commitment that they give, the hours they put in, that goes sometimes unseen, the hours that has to be recognised as well. And going forward for 2014, I just want to wish everybody a better year, because in West Donegal it hasn't been that good year, especially the ending part of it. And I just want to wish everybody well for that.
And the same to yourself, Micheál. Slán agus maith liom. Good morning. It's a Tuesday morning. It's the first 9 till noon show of the new year. I'm joined on the line by Paul Doherty. He's one of the founders and a volunteer at the Men's Shed in Manor, where sadly a quantity of oil was taken from a tank over the Christmas period. Paul, good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal.
Donal indeed, yeah. Paul, in terms of this 600 litres of oil taken from the tank, that's no small amount of oil and that's no small financial loss for the Men's Shed and its volunteers.
No, it's no small amount. Unfortunately, there's a tank right beside it, and which feeds a house, which houses a lady and child, and they also lost their tank of oil. I'm not sure the figure of it, but so she's at a loss too. At this time of year and the hardship and whatnot, it's, so we're not the only ones in this situation.
Now, first and foremost, you're urging people in the area to be vigilant, and also, obviously, if anyone saw anything happen around those two tanks, both your own and the tank serving your neighbour, to make contact with Gardaí and let them know what they've seen.
It's just a case of highlighting it. Unfortunately, it's gone, and probably there'll be no return, but if people just, you know, keep a wee eye out and be aware of it, then I was chatting to a lot of people kind of in the area since, and it's, we're not the only ones this has happened to recently. It's going on, and we just need to be more vigilant. I suppose to your own downfall, we a lot of goodwill towards the Men's Shed and a lot of generosity, and we didn't really even take any preventative steps, like putting a fence running around our tank. We're still in the early stages. Mm-hmm. We hadn't even a lock on it. Like, you know, we probably with all the good will towards us, we can overlook that. But after consulting the guards, like it's something we're going to have to do now, maybe CCTV or something like that, and putting a fence or something around our tanks.
And it's coming at a time when the importance of the men's shed movement and the importance of men's sheds to the mental health of many was being highlighted toward the end of last year. And I think it's fair to say that the last couple of months has seen a really strong focus on the benefits of men's sheds in communities, and the fact that the one in Manor is a fairly new initiative as well.
It's been brilliant. You know, there's people coming here and you see what it means to them. It's a new life to a lot of people. You can see that the buzz, there's a great buzz about the place, and people who, especially after coming out of COVID, all the restrictions, and we're opening up our doors again to people. This was, like, there was a real feel-good factor, and it's just a pity now that this serves it a bit, but we'll move on again, and it won't deter us from what we're doing, like, and we'll be back.
And obviously, like many voluntary organisations and voluntary initiatives, the Men's Shed is not one awash with money. You're getting by on a very small amount, and this is going to hit you. I'm sure there's been a few cold days recently in the Men's Shed, but as you've said, the most important thing is that you are going to keep going and you are going to keep turning up.
Aye. There's been a lot of generosity and support, local people, businesses. I guess what we're basically going on, and there's grants available, surely, and councillors have donated generously. You know, they see the good that's been done on it, and people, like, they're paying us in kind, and it's just a pity. And unfortunately, maybe I'm sure the people that took the oil knew what the effort has went into getting us up and going. That's an unfortunate thing, and they're probably maybe in our own area and seeing it, but it didn't deter them from taking it. And as I say, too, the next door tank as well, unfortunately, is a victim as well.
Yeah. Paul, it's a sad thing to have to report, and it's good to report that you're getting the support of the community and that you're keeping going and that this isn't going to deter you. But if anyone can throw any light on what may have happened, both to your own tank and to your neighbour's tank as well, then we would ask them, as we say, to make contact with the Gardaí and to let them know what's happened. But in the meantime, Paul Doherty, we wish you well and thanks very much indeed for speaking to us.
Thanks very much. I'd just like to thank anybody there that gave us any support through the year and getting up and running, and it's very much appreciated, and wish everybody a happy new year.
Paul, thank you, and a happy new year to you and to all involved with the Men's Shed in Manor as well. Thank you very much indeed. That was Paul there from the Men's Shed in Manor. Now, returning to the issue of road safety, as we say, it's been a new story with Michaela on the news throughout the morning. We spoke to Susan Gray from Park earlier as well. Joined now on Zoom by David Martin, and David is the communications officer with the Road Safety Authority. And David now joins us on Zoom. David, good morning.
Good morning, how are you?
Very well indeed. David, the figures for 2023, not good. 184 nationally lives lost on the road, 10 lost in Donegal. The Donegal figure was up on 2022. The national figure was up, indeed, one of the highest figures in 10 years. A disappointment for an organisation whose current aim is to have road deaths down to zero by 2050.
Well, it's absolutely heartbreaking and devastating year, you know, and the numbers are awful, but, you know, each number is an individual family, you know, who are completely devastated by what's occurred. You're right, the numbers are up 19% on 2022, which is very disconcerting. The numbers were kind of skewed during COVID because obviously traffic volumes were down for a year or two. But what we've seen in the last year or two is a sort of a very worrying spike in the wrong direction. I mean, you know, if you look at the longer term trend is good, and I don't want to sound complacent, but if you look back as far 2006, say, which isn't that long ago, we had 365 deaths. So we're about half of where we were then. But the trend is wrong. It's going in the wrong direction at the moment. So it's something that we're very, very concerned with at the Road Safety Authority, and also the government and in Garda Síochána Conor are very, very concerned about it. And it's something that we clearly will be doing everything to address over the coming months.
We spoke earlier to Susan Gray from Park. I'm sure you know Susan well yourself. In terms of the comments Park have been making, one of them is that there's been a reduction in a number of road policing units. Indeed, there's been a reduction nationally in the number of Gardaí assigned to road policing units. Is there a connection between that and the fact that we are seeing road deaths rise?
Well, that you know, that's a subject for Garda Síochána. They're ultimately responsible for enforcement. Clearly there is a correlation between driver behaviour and enforcement. There's no doubt about it. We were working on these figures over the last few days, and I was speaking to Garda Síochána, and they were giving me some of the figures that they've seen over the year. There was 7,707 arrests for intoxicated driving. That's drink and drug driving. So what we're seeing is there's been a worrying trend in the wrong direction there. Speeding, which is a really killer offence, there was something like 200,000 speeding offences last year, and 5,300 people were fined for not wearing seatbelts. We know in the fatalities last year, a significant minority of those poor people who died were not wearing seatbelts. And also, distracted driving is an absolute killer behaviour, and particularly using mobile phones, 18,800 fines. So what we're saying is, you know, there are bad behaviours on the road. There's no doubt about it. Will enforcement help? Of course it will. We were very reassured when the government freed up some more money in terms of camera-based enforcement in last year, and we're going to see more of that next year. We will be talking to Garda Síochána. We will be talking to the Minister Chambers. There's a lot of work to be done to address this.
A lot of discussion about potential ways of addressing it. One of the issues that was mentioned in discussions before Christmas and the new road safety bill was the potential of perhaps having different penalty point levels for different times. There was a suggestion that there'd be different levels, say, on bank holidays. Now, that isn't in the latest legislation because there's potential legal problems. One of our callers, for instance, saying there's an increase in road fatalities between 8 p.m. and 8 a.m., almost half occurring during those hours, with a particular increase between midnight and 4 a.m. and maybe questions, should there be higher penalty points between midnight and 4 than there are, say, between 12 noon and 4 in the afternoon? Are those items all still under discussion? Are they still potentially on the table?
Well, again, you know, it's something for the government. There's no doubt about it, though. What we're seeing is a disproportionate amount of fatalities taking place at night when traffic volumes are down. You know, that doesn't make sense at all. You know, also at weekends, you know, about half of all fatalities took place last year at weekends. So it's something that clearly needs to be addressed. There was talk, as you mentioned, of introducing higher penalty points over bank holiday weekends. And that's something that's been introduced in other jurisdictions and proven to be very, very effective. It's illegal. It's a very complex legal situation. And it's something that the Attorney General will clearly have to look at. In principle, if it's going to bring down fatalities, it's something that we would endorse. And clearly, as you mentioned as well, those dangerous times, you know, at night, late at night, when volumes are down, and at weekends, should we look at that? I think we should be looking at everything. Everything should be on the table.
As you said, the government makes the decisions, but presumably those decisions aren't made in a vacuum. Those decisions are made with conversations, consultations and advice from yourselves.
Yes, one of our major functions is we have a research department that does this analysis and does the deep dive into what, you know, what can be done and what's going on, what are the international trends. So we will be feeding into the government on that. There is going to be a meeting early in the new year with the government, with the minister and the various agencies, and to review the year and to look ahead as to what we will be doing and what changes might be necessary over the coming months.
The Taoiseach did say recently that he was going to take a very personal interest in this as well, and he called all his ministers in for discussions and made it quite clear that he was going to be front and centre when it comes to these discussions in 2024. Do you expect that to change anything?
Well, I know our chief exec, Sam Wade, met with on Taoiseach a couple of months ago. It is very much a priority and we welcome that. You know, the figures are just not acceptable. They're not sustainable. And we welcome the fact that the government is a priority for the government, and clearly we'll be working very, very closely with them over the coming months.
What's the RSA's strategy into 2024? Obviously, I'm sure there'll be targeted advertising campaigns, there'll be consultations with Gardaí and government with regards to enforcement and discussions about the longer term potential for further laws or tightening of laws. What will be to the cornerstone of what you'll be doing in the months to come?
Well, one of the key things for us is to, you know, how do we communicate with people? You know, we see that last year a disproportionate number of the fatalities were male. You know, we can see that nearly 80% of fatalities last year were male. And again, an awful lot of younger cohort dying as well. The highest risk age group is aged sort of between 16 and 25. That accounted for 26% of fatalities last year. So how do we talk to those people? How do we get the message across? Young males have the sense of, you know, invulnerability. They're immortal. Nothing can happen to them. And what we've looked at, we see this, you know, typically they don't look at TV the way I would have when I was that age. You know, so the old means of communicating with them perhaps are not going to work. So we're analysing, we're reviewing our communications campaign too. And really, you know, recognising the fact that it's very much a fragmented media landscape at the moment. And so we're doing a lot more on social media and other, you know, ways of communicating with this particular cohort.
Yeah, because I mean, a lot of the thought in the past would have been the best way to get to people would be to put an ad on before the news or put an ad on before the Late Late Show on a Friday night. And the question is really how many males aged between 18 and 25 are watching the news at 9 o'clock in the evening. And the reality these days is probably not very many. So maybe where you need to be looking is places like TikTok, is even places like YouTube,
very
and
much
online
so.
Advertising in game platforms and things like that.
Yes. Yeah. You know, and look, we're not, you know, clearly we continue to do TV advertising, we do radio advertising. It's not just one size fits all, but there is absolute increased emphasis now on social media and TikTok and talking to them using the media that they engage with.
David Martin, one more question, and it's an issue that was raised with us by Susan Gray, and I'm sure she's had discussions with yourselves on this as well, and that was the issue of the number of no-shows for tests, an excess of 5,000 no-shows for tests last year. That must be a very, very concerning figure for you.
It is very, very frustrating. And particularly, you know, there is a backlog at the moment. And it's something that we are working on to try and address. And we are, it's improving slowly. But the fact that people are not turning up for them is very, very frustrating from our point of view.
And the corollary question then that goes on from that is there a phenomenon out there which would be worrying of people who, rather than take a test, are effectively allowing their provisional licences to roll over year on year on year and doing that instead of a test? And if that's the case, that must be very concerning to you and to all involved.
It is. And look, it's something that I know that the Minister is very much aware of, and it is high on our list of priorities as well. You know, it's a bad behaviour. It goes back many, you know, I remember when I was a kid, there was a lot of people driving around in provisional licences for a very, very long time. And it's something that we just can't put up with.
Yeah. Suggestions that there will be legislation in place to have this tackled not too long into 2024. That's something you'd welcome, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. 100% we're working that, yes.
David Martin, we'll be certainly hoping that the figures in 2024 are substantially down on 2023. And again, we remind ourselves that the stated aim of RSA is that it'll be zero road deaths by 2050.
That is our ultimate goal. That's where we're going to get to.
David Martin, thank you very much indeed. That's David Martin. He's the Communications Officer with the Road Safety Authority. Now, let's look at some of your comments. And we spoke earlier to Garda Grainne Doherty about the theft of number plates and concern that, I mean, number plates stolen from a car could be used for other purposes. Caller says there's nothing to stop you or I walking into a shop and getting number plates made. Maybe that needs to be stopped by Garda and the law. When you go into a shop, they should ask what's the name for the plates. It would help with this issue. Another caller says, hopefully in 2024, our government officials will start to fight for the rights of SNAs. I've been an SNA for 4 years. I've good experience. Now the department have called an SNA role Ukrainian hours. It's reviewed every 3 or 4 months, just so they don't have to give us yearly contracts. I'm giving this country one more year and then it's time to exit if things don't improve. Everyone gets everything when they come into the country. Leo and Martin, please stop not answering the question and start looking after the real Irish people that put you into power. Hard-working Irish people are sick of this situation. So says a caller there. Another caller says, I'm emailing to ask why a main national route between Castlefin and Liscooley has been left completely flooded across two lanes over the holiday period. Issues have only arisen since water mains work had been carried out, and obviously there hasn't been staff there to deal with the situation. The council did seem to be making an effort to sort the situation out, but to no avail. How there were no serious accidents on this route is a miracle, to say the least. So says a caller. Caller says, Happy New Year to Greg, Caroline, myself and all those working on the 9 till noon show. Mary, thank you very much indeed for that. Regarding the treatment of cancer patients in Letterkenny, caller says the MRI machine is broken since last week or the week before. I've had to drive 4 hours to Galway to get an MRI. I asked if I could get a private scan. I was told I couldn't, as all departments have to work together. I was on the road to Sligo on the way to Galway when they rang me to say my scan was next week. They said that Galway needed it before the 8th. It's scheduled for the 9th. They have no care or consideration. There's no humanity. And caller, all I can say is I fully appreciate and understand the frustration of having to go to Galway for MRIs and for tests and for chats with the consultants and for chats with doctors. And it's a road that very many people, yours truly included, know very, very well indeed. And we say no more. Regarding the Revenue Commissioner and Tax Office in Letterkenny, the staff are working from home since COVID. They come in for one half day, one day a week. They won't meet you in the office. They won't answer the phones. The national phone lines aren't answered either. They won't have a Zoom. They work via email. You send a few emails back and forth and then you don't hear from them. I'm trying to get arrangements in order since my deadline in November. I've had no luck. A security guard will accept some of the documents when you go into the office, but not all. I know lots of people are experiencing this. At the end of the day, we all pay taxes and this is a public service. So says a caller. Now, we're going to take a quick break. After the break, we will be speaking about health and wellness and New Year's resolutions. It is that time of year. Let's talk about New Year's resolutions. Do you start your New Year's resolutions on the 1st of January? Do you start your New Year's resolutions on the 7th of January after Epiphany when the 12 days of Christmas are officially over? I tend to sort of think as soon as, you know, once we're still with the tree up in the room and before Epiphany, I sort of say, yeah, well, the resolutions kind of kick in after Christmas. Plus there's about 875,000 calories left in the house that have to be dealt with. But that's for another day. We're going to say a very good morning to Claire McKenna, who is a health and wellness coach. And Claire's going to discuss that thorny issue of New Year's resolutions. Claire, good morning.
Good morning and a happy new year to you.
And a happy new year to you and yours as well. Claire, I suppose we all are full of good intentions and we all know the cliches. They're wheeled out by comedians every year. The gym memberships that are bought and are enacted twice over the course of January and then are completely ignored for the other 11 months. And we all say we're going to change. We all say we're going to do the right thing. And then by about the middle of January, we're failing. And by the 1st of February, we've forgotten we ever made the resolution.
Yeah, I mean, it's the language around it. I mean, you even said we're failing. But it's all really about mindset, I think, when it comes down to it. I don't think there is necessarily a right way or a wrong way to live. When it comes to health and well-being, it's really important that we try to throw away all of that language around good food and bad food. I mean, the food that we've eaten over the last couple of weeks, gathering together with family, whether it was the work Christmas do or whether it's a bowl of Christmas pudding I brought to the TV last night. I mean, that's all part of coming together and part of enjoying the season. For us to start beating ourselves up about it now is just not a great start to the new year. And there is a lot of debate around New Year's resolutions and whether or not they're a good thing. And it is nice to harness the energy of a new year, a new start, even if you open up a new copybook, there's a new energy of possibility to it. So yes, it's good to harness that and think about what worked and didn't work for you in 2023 and how would you like to feel in 2024. So I'm not denying that there are some positives to it, but I think for people to fall into the trap now of feeling lethargic, you know, feeling the effects of the indulgence over the few weeks and turning that on themselves and saying, right, that's it, I'm not eating any more sugar and I'm going to pound the pavement from 5 a.m. that's very hard to sustain. It's more questions of what's working for me right now in life? What isn't? What are some small changes I'd like to make? And I always like to think, why not look at what are you going to add in rather than what are you going to take out? And that could be things like spending more time with friends and family, making sure I make more phone calls with my close friends. It doesn't have to be that you'll never eat a packet of crisps again.
I saw a meme this morning actually on social media that a friend of mine posted, and I was very taken by it. It said, this year, why not stop trying to change yourself and instead try to be yourself? And I thought, that's an interesting way of putting it. I like that.
Yeah, it's lovely because we get a lot of new year, new you. But I mean, what's wrong with the you right now? Mm. Realistically, all of us are just doing our best. There's a lot going on in the world right now. It's the really simple things that are really, really important, like our health and spending time with the people that we love. I mean, there are some pillars to health: sleep, movement, nutrition, and taking time to rest and reflect. They're all things as humans that we need. So there's certainly areas that people might look at. Am I sleeping well? Am I focused on that? How am I eating? Could I throw in more veg? Could I cook a little bit more at home? Everybody's going to be different. People have different things going on, but also trying to take time away for yourself, whether that's booking a weekend away or a retreat or just a night away. Sometimes it's important for us to try and retreat a little bit. And that's when we can really figure out if there are changes we want to make in our lives.
Do we try to do too much too soon?
Yeah, I think so. And that's sort of what we're told, that we have to really get on board with this massive fitness plan and no pain, no gain, we hear all the time. And that's not true. We can really build small amounts of change into our days and weeks, and they will build to make a massive difference. So, you know, people kind of roll their eyes and think, no, that can't be true. But if you take the stairs instead of the lift, if you walk to the shop for your bottle of milk and come back, that over time adds up far better than if you hammer it out at a gym membership for the 3 weeks of January and then don't go again because you don't like it. If you don't like the gym, don't go to the gym. It could be swimming for somebody. It could be a dance class. It could be a walk with the dog, catching up with a friend. Try and look at it as a positive thing rather than we have to really suffer, you know, to be behaving correctly and being good, as we say.
And you reckon, and it makes sense that a small change is going to be way more easy to sustain than a radical one.
Yeah, and I think rather than us constantly wanting to change our bodies and how we look, coming from a sense of not being happy with how we are, that's not very motivating because realistically, 3 weeks in, you're like, well, maybe I don't care that much about having abs of steel. Maybe I'm running around after kids and doing pickups. There's only so much I could do. But if you're looking more from a point of view of, I want to have more energy, I want to feel strong, I don't want to have an afternoon slump. So maybe a little bit more fresh air, a bit more movement might make a difference. It's just a little shift in mindset, and it goes way more easier on ourselves. And we're told that, you know, goals have to be huge and massive. And don't get me wrong, I mean, I love to set a goal and get that sense of achievement. But I think we need to go easy on ourselves, particularly now that we're packing away all the Christmas decorations. As you say, the 8,000 calories will be gone. All those little niceties we've been wrapping ourselves up with, you know, let's go gentle into this new year, I say.
Do we need to have a rebrand in terms of not call them New Year's resolutions anymore? Because even the word resolutions, there's almost a harshness to it. Whereas if it was New Year reset or New Year rethink or New Year regeneration or something, that might be more, you know, and I know there's an awful lot of said these days about branding and stuff like that, but maybe we're falling into a trap because of the way this is phrased and described, that maybe what we need is to have a new look at what it is and look at it as a time to just step back, rethink, reconfigure, and just perhaps reset some goals. That it's not just like,
yeah,
New Year, big, huge change, da-da, everything is different now. And the reality is, for most people, it won't be.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think reset sounds quite nice. Resolution sounds like it's some sort of contract we're setting with ourselves. Whereas there should be flexibility, even in any health and wellness routine that you have. There's going to be a week where work is going to really kick off and you might have to drop that ball, or you might have a sick kid so you don't get to that gym class that week. I mean, we have to have a certain amount of flexibility in our life and not be beating ourselves up over it. So yeah, I completely agree with you. And I think looking at more positive things, like maybe bringing in a gratitude practice, there are so many studies to show the impact that can have, to just at the end of the day, think of three things that you're grateful for. And it could be finding a good parking spot at the supermarket, or somebody that smiled at you in the queue as you got your coffee. It can be as small as that. And then the next day, your brain starts to look out for those things to save you time for that list later on. And that's a real lift to everyone's mood and well-being. And that's something really small and really simple. And it doesn't have that same harshness as a New Year's resolution might.
And also, if you recognise the importance of getting a smile from somebody in a queue, maybe tomorrow you'll be the one that smiles at somebody else to give them that lift.
I think so. You know, and you never really know what's going on in people's lives. So sometimes that simple chat, I mean, I think here in the island of Ireland, we're great at that. We're great at making, you know, small talk out and about with people. And I think it's really important to keep that connection going. Human connection is huge for our health and well-being. So whether it's making sure we're connecting more with the people that we love, because it can be hard. Sometimes you can let friendships slip by, or, you know, just sending the odd text or voice notes we've got great at, rather than the phone call or the face-to-face. So connecting with the people in our close circle is so important. Mm-hmm. But then, yeah, like connecting within our community and stopping and chatting and checking in on neighbours. I mean, there are all other things we could add that we'd like to bring into the new year that would, you know, not only lift others, but lift us too.
And you know what? If I had tried to prime you into my next point, I couldn't have done it any better, because we've received a text in from a caller, and I'm going to leave it on this. My New Year's resolution is to actually visit an elderly person in my community once a month. I set the ball rolling yesterday by calling them and telling them I was going to call around at 7 o'clock on Thursday night. That way they're expecting me and they're safe to answer the door. Loneliness is one of the biggest killers in our country. And I think that
that's a
lovely point. And I think that's a lovely point to end it on. Claire McKenna, health and wellness coach, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. Hopefully you've given all of us food for thought and all of us some encouragement as well. That, as you say, we can approach this in a very different frame of mind than we may have done before. And that's a frame of mind that's going to give us all the more chance of really, really changing ourselves, changing our surroundings, changing our communities and being better people as a result. Thank you very much indeed, Claire.
Thank you so much, and I wish you and your listeners a fantastic 2024.
And you and yours as well, Claire. Thank you. That's Claire there, a health and wellness coach. A few comments before we go. We were speaking earlier about Terry Wogan's son saying he believed Tubridy would go the whole way. Well, caller says Terry had his togs. That was Terry's old geezers and gals. But Tubbs will have his dubs and the tub rub, as someone had to make way for his show. I did dip in and out. 2 extra hours of music. Interesting choice of first songs. Pride and Green Grass. I did catch Russell Crowe in mid-party. Sounded like he didn't want to talk, but he did mention the Northwest and Mass Putching. Muff Whiskey were the last words he said. If he were smart, he'd had Murren Bradley on with those Ballybuffet blues fresh from the Hootenanny, and I will absolutely endorse that last comment. Obviously, I didn't get to hear any of Ryan Tubridy's programme this morning because I was somewhat doing the same thing myself, but Murren Bradley, and did you see the Hootenanny the other night? How amazing was that? Absolutely brilliant. Can't say anything else, but it was just stunning. So, you know, and so glad to be able to say that, yeah, for many people, the Monday night sessions on Highland were the first time they heard of them. And Paul just put up a very interesting post this morning where Paul just played a little bit where Murren said, well, I do have something coming up on TV soon, but I can't really talk about it at the moment. How stunning was that? Brilliant. What a point went on. It's coming to the end of the show, so thank you very much indeed for all your calls, for your texts. Thanks to Caroline and to Shannon for all their help. Thanks to auto contributors. Most of all, thank you to you for listening. John's up next around the Northwest, but for myself, Donal Kavanagh, have a very, very good day.